Success Leaves Clues podcast with Robin Bailey and Al McDonald. Have you ever wondered what makes someone successful? What are they doing that's different? How do they achieve greatness? We believe that success leaves clues. In this series, we are interviewing very successful people from different walks of life to hear their stories. We'd like to remind our listeners that the views expressed in this podcast are those of our guests and not necessarily those shared by our hosts. Today's episode is sponsored by Life and Legacy Advisory Group. Discover our commitment to our clients. At Life and Legacy, building wealth, securing your family's future, giving back, and creating a lasting legacy are not just values, but a way of life. Let us guide you toward a future aligned with what matters most to you. We're also brought to you by Aria Benefits. If you're a business leader challenged with talent attraction, employee engagement, or supporting mental health, we can help. Use your benefits package as the key to unlock your workforce. Now here's your hosts, Robin Bailey and Al McDonald.
Welcome back to the Success Leaves Clues podcast. I'm your host, Robin Bailey, back at it again with my fantastic co-host, who happens to be my business partner as well, Al McDonald. Al, I know it's been a great summer, or great latter part to the summer, for getting out your bike, and you raised a lot of money this year for Sick Kids, and I always like to give that a plug. So if you would, how did that go this year?
Yeah, another opportunity to get out on my bike for a good cause. So yep, finished that up at the end of August, and I think it was the second highest total of funds raised. And I did hear a report yesterday on the news that Sick Kids Hospital was recognized as the leading children's hospital in the world.
Wow.
So great to help them out and continue to do what they're doing.
Well, we're very lucky to live in Toronto, and we're very lucky to be able to support great causes like that. And thank you for your continued bike riding efforts.
My pleasure.
Every year, Al, every year you're doing more and more. So it's really inspiring to watch. Well, we're back at it again on our podcast Friday, and I could not be more thrilled to chat with this person because our first conversation, we call them chemistry calls, was so good. I was just so excited to bring her on the podcast. So we're thrilled to welcome Cheryl Kerrigan, award-winning Chief People Officer at Blue Cat, and a big thank you to our good friend Daniil Sharney for this introduction. Welcome to the show, Cheryl.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Well, I'm going to talk a little bit about you here because you've got a very impressive bio and it's going to come up in some of the questions that we have for you. So Cheryl leads the people strategy behind one of Canada's fastest growing technology companies, named Canadian HR Leader of the Year and Canada's most admired CPCO in 2023. Cheryl is known for building high performing teams, championing employee experience, and shaping cultures where people and performance thrive together. With more than two decades of global HR leadership under her belt, Cheryl has worked across industry and borders, developing expertise in talent acquisition, employee engagement, learning and development, and performance management. At Blue Cat, she plays a key role on the executive team, helping drive growth by aligning people practices with business priorities. She's also deeply committed to making sure every cat feels valued, empowered, and inspired. Whether she's navigating scale-up challenges or reimagining what modern HR leadership looks like, Cheryl brings passion, perspective, and a proven ability to create workspaces where people want to stay and grow. That's an amazing bio. Like, does it feel weird hearing that when you know?
It does. I'm like, who wrote that? I'm like, where did you get that from? Because I need a copy of that.
It's so funny when you hear other people talk about you, right?
Yeah.
And Al and I are often, we're the beneficiaries of meeting really smart people. You know, we're 260 episodes in now and talking to some of Canada's top leaders. And sometimes Al and I will finish the call and be like, yeah, I meet someone like that. I feel like a little,
very humbling.
Maybe I need to work a little bit more. Yeah, very humbling. Yeah. That's a good way to put it, Al. Well, Cheryl, let's start with some of the things that we talked about in your bio. You've been recognized as one of the top HR leaders in Canada, you know, very impressive milestone, of course. If you're looking back, what do you think are the experiences or choices that shaped the kind of leader that you are sitting here today?
Yeah, it's funny because as you read that out, I was like, wow, you know, you kind of reflect on how you got here and the choices you made along the way. And I think for me, it was really having the confidence and maybe the courage to try things before maybe I was ready to actually try them, before maybe my resume would have shown like, oh, she's, you know, 100% ready for that role. I'm kind of one of those people that figures it out along the way. And that's probably what I lean on most as my strength in my career. I guess I had the courage to kind of jump in and, you know, I might have known like 70% of it, but of the job, but I didn't know all of it. And I guess I had you know, being humble, like you said, like it's about putting your hand up and saying, okay, I'll try it. And I think I've got a good idea of how I'm going to get it done, but I'm going to make mistakes along the way. And that's okay, because when you make mistakes is when you learn the most. So I think that that has served me well, like that ability to just kind of leap in and not overthink it, take the chance. And it's really paid off well for me in my career.
And I find when I've spoken to other people who have said something similar, they're willing to figure it out along the way and put their hand up. I love that visual that I get when you're putting your hand up. Where do you think that comes from? Because I remember really well, and I look at adults as little babies that grew up, right?
Yeah.
And I can imagine the three of us sitting in, you know, a grade three class. And I remember me sitting in a grade three class, and any chance I had, and this is changed over the years, thank goodness, but I remember sitting there in the back of the class wherever possible, and when the teacher would ask for someone to come up to the board or participate in a project, my head would be down. Uh-huh. And there would be kids that would put their hand up.
Yep.
And I imagine, especially in your adult career, you're one of those people that put their hand up early.
Yeah. And it's funny because I was that kid in the back too. Like,
were you?
Putting my head down. And you know, when you had to do like out loud reading, I'd be freaking out, be like trying to figure out which paragraph I'd be asked to read. And I think that comes with time and experience. Like you kind of start to meet people and you gain a confidence, I suppose, in yourself by being exposed to different scenarios and seeing, you know what, a lot of people, like they just have that confidence and ability to take a leap and figure it out. And I think, not suggesting that people don't know what they're doing, but I think that that is a real differentiator for the people that propel their careers forward because they believe in themselves. They have this confidence. And I don't know where it comes from. And I think I grew into it. I definitely think it wasn't always there, you know, when I was younger in my career. And you know what I attribute it to is really great mentors. I had people in my career, in particular, I've been very fortunate from the start of my career to have really strong female mentors. So women mentors that were doing things maybe before their time when they weren't necessarily surrounded by others like them. And I was exposed to that. And I learned a ton from just the way they modeled behavior and the way they worked and the way they interacted. So I think, like, again, having exposure to people that you admire that are successful also served me very well. And the fact that they would push me, they'd be like, you can do this. And so I kind of, that started early on in my career. And then that's kind of paid forward to have that confidence to be able to kind of jump into things.
I'm so happy to hear that that resonates with you because again, it's like when you come into business, there's imposter syndrome.
Correct.
And here I was thinking at the time, oh, I'm the only dumb kid. I'm saying that with quotations in the class because I don't want to put my hand up. Mm-hmm. So it's very refreshing to hear someone openly talk about that, like we're talking here, and then see that person turn into a very successful person, which I would consider ourselves as well. Like we've built a really, really good company. But I think you touch on a really good point because it happened for me as well. I think experience and exposure over time helps that along the way. But those mentors, the people that maybe see that belief in you, even when you don't, and kind of push you in that direction. And I think you experience that and so have I, and those people make a really big difference. So I think we have a lot of different listeners on the show. We have people who have been around a long time. We have people who are just coming into, I know because they reach out. We have university students who are looking into careers, right?
Yeah.
And it's quite funny. Don't be surprised, by the way, if you get some resumes after this, because that's kind of what happens.
I'm very passionate of like giving back because it happened to me. And again, wouldn't have had these experiences if I didn't have good sponsorship throughout my career.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm really glad you brought that up because I think if there's people at our stage of business, if there's a way that you can, someone had just said it to me, send the elevator back down and help someone and provide that mentorship that helped you along the way, then I think that's something, a service we have a duty to do. So
absolutely.
I'm so glad you brought that up.
Yeah. I mean, again, I think it's really about, like you said, reaching out your hand and giving a little bit of a pull. You're not boosting them all the way up, but you're giving them that little extra step over the curb so they don't fall down. Like, I think that that's really important. And I think it goes a long way with them feeling confident and going after their next job. And it certainly helped me knowing that someone believed in me and had my back and was there to have conversations with me when I wasn't quite sure but also that I wasn't going to get penalized when I didn't know everything. Because again, like I got stepped into roles pretty fast without having a ton of exposure, but I had that comfort with my leader. So strong leadership and knowing that they saw potential in me. And I think that that's a huge thing for people to like, you know, you might not have all the experience, but you've got the right potential and ability to kind of navigate, problem solve, try things out. Again, when things might not be going the way you want them to and course correct. Like, I think those are all things that I still look at when I'm hiring, you know, for those entry level jobs. And honestly, quite frankly, that's the people I like to work with today. Like the ones that just aren't like, well, I know it all. And, you know, I'm so smart because I've been doing this for 25 years. I like the people that are still willing to learn and say, you know what? Oh, like, I don't know what I'm doing. I better go and figure this out, or I better go ask someone that knows more than me. So I think it's still a journey for me, learning and trying things out and getting better at my job and making sure that I'm giving back as well.
And the one thing that I'm hearing, Cheryl, is you're not afraid to fail.
No. Not at all. I mean, God, I fail all the time. Like,
yes.
I fail.
Yes,
the time.
We do. We all do.
Yeah.
And it's just a question of whether or not we can learn from it. And
yeah,
like you say, figure it out and maybe get some help along the way.
You got it.
I would love to shift gears a little bit. And we've read your bio. It's very impressive. You've got a good track record, a great track record in the history. And you've spent your career building some high performing teams around the globe, it sounds like.
Yeah.
So maybe can you talk a little bit about some common elements, some key elements that you see that consistently create that thriving workplace and culture, you know, regardless of what industry we're talking about or what geography we're talking about? Are there some key things that you see?
Yeah, I think our number one duty to our employees, and I talk about this a lot, is to over-communicate. I think how to build high-performing teams is really being clear on where the company direction is going. So what are those strategic key initiatives that everyone can align behind and get excited about? Continually communicating on how we're achieving results as an organization. And then even more important, trying to connect people's day-to-day work on how they are connecting to the wider organizational goals. I think a lot of times when you sit in the C-suite, you're like, oh yeah, we're clear. And the feedback consistently, and what I've learned, and I'm still learning, is that we may think we're clear when we're communicating why we've decided to, let's call it, acquire a new company or go into a new geographical region or invest in a new product to develop. But unfortunately, the trickle down doesn't always occur. So one, communication, and then very closely tied to that is developing your leaders, like ensuring that your leadership team, whether it's a manager of a team or a director or a team lead, anyone that has people reporting into them is, again, very clear on what their responsibilities are as a leader. I think often, I come from tech, as you mentioned, in high growth tech companies, we are often guilty of taking, you know, the high performing technical, brilliant employees and turning them into leaders, which can work. But just because you're a high performing technical person doesn't mean you're a natural born leader. So I think, again, what we've done and what I continue to drive is that leadership development program. And we actually give coaches. We have a third party company where we give our leaders the ability to have a coach. So we've been running this program now for 3 years. What a material difference that makes to have someone outside of the organization that your organization is willing to invest in for you to go and, you know, bounce off like your leadership ideas or things that you might be struggling with. That's been a game changer. So again, communication and really, really enabling the leaders in your organization to know what they're responsible for. You know, it's not just a performance management conversation, but it's really like, how do we guide our leaders to kind of cascade the method that we're trying to send around the world? So I really don't think that's different in any geography at all.
So what I think I'm hearing there is the what you said, really trying to over communicate. But then I like that then you talked about the how, which it sounds to me like is, okay, let's make sure that this message is not just communicated a lot, but communicated consistently all the way down the channel, if you will, throughout the organization. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, absolutely. And not only, and I kind of talk directionally down, if you will, but it's not only that, it's that communication loop. So ensuring that employees feel comfortable, safe, familiar enough with what we're trying to do to ask the hard question and to give feedback if they're not clear. So I think, again, it's that communication feedback loop that I think really sets apart great companies versus kind of the ones that are limping along and struggling. It's, you know, really, you only get things done through the people that you hire and retain. So I think like just ensuring that people really feel that they are a team. We have a culture code, and one of our core culture values is we win as a team. So that's like goes through the entire organization, that this is together, we are going to succeed. It's not an individual sport, if you will.
Cheryl, we're chatting about two things here. We're chatting about business growth, but we're also chatting about people as well. And I think anyone who's involved in tech, either directly or adjacent to, knows pace of change in tech is like relentless, right? Like it does not stop.
Yeah.
Can you talk to us about like, how do you balance supporting that business growth that is really important? And again, you've already talked about over-communicating to people, really making sure that's there.
Yeah.
But then how do you balance that with ensuring your people have the resources and resilience they need to succeed?
Yeah. So what you just said was resilience. So what my CEO and I talk about a lot is that tech companies generally are in constant change. Like it's never static. We talk a lot about the fact that, and we say that to the company too. Like my CEO will stand up and be like, well, the one thing that you can see is a constant is change. So really acknowledging that. So obviously, you know, I don't want to bring up the pandemic, but it's kind of one of those glaring things where like what we had to do differently, that required a ton of resilience and ability to flex, ability to be flexible. But I think also coupled with that, like, yes, we can acknowledge that there's change, but there's sometimes you just need to pause. So one of the things that we did a couple of years ago was we recognized that there is a real phenomenon of like people feeling overstressed and overwhelmed by not only their work environment, but what's happening in the world. So that's a really hard thing to come to work and be like switched on all the time when you're worrying about like world events. So one of the things we did was like call that out. And we actually, it's not a new thing, but we were one of those kind of scrappy software companies that were like, okay, here's your 15, 20 days of vacation that you get a year. But that really wasn't working because people weren't taking their PTO. They were not taking the days because they just didn't feel like they had the time. So about 3 or 4 years ago, we instituted what we call wellness days, and we've kept them. They're 8 days out of the year where we bucket them onto a long weekend. And we intentionally do that to ensure that the entire company is offline. So you know how you go on vacation, it doesn't stop the rest of the day. So this is really meant to be like kind of those wellness days where you take a pause, have an extra long weekend, give you some time to enjoy yourself without hopefully having your inbox fill up because you took your eye off of it for a day. And I think that's the responsibility of organization. Yes, it's all about growth and things like that. But if you're burning out your employees along the way, you know, you're not going to get there. So I think it's a real important balance for people in my role to look at like kind of the pulse of what's happening in the organization. And there's indicators of seeing that, especially if you have that feedback loop that I was talking about earlier, like there's ways to kind of spot this and just having the compassion. It's not cutthroat. This is really about ensuring that the employee experience is taking into account all of the stressors that people have in their lives. So I think for me, that's been a real shift. Like that probably wasn't something I thought about 20 years ago when I started my career, but it's certainly top of mind now, just given kind of the environment that we work in today.
Yeah, and certainly I'm glad you brought that up because when we're chatting about these things, everyone thinks about the work environment. And outside of that, everyone has their stressors, you know, family and commitments. Yep. And on top of that, the world we live in, as you said, is constantly changing and there's so much stress around that. And I feel for people who are coming in and they're dealing with everything else they're dealing with on top of that. So I love the idea that, you know, you talked about there are indicators, like you can manage this and make sure people have resources available to them.
Yeah.
So that they don't burn out. And, you know, I've talked to Al about that too, because one of the things that I will go 100 miles an hour, but I know that and I know I will burn out. So I very purposefully probably take more vacation than anyone else in the company. But I do that because I know that's what I need to do. I need that reset. Right. And it seems to work very well. And Al gets a break for me as well. So he doesn't mind that either.
You know what? And I think just a comment on that, Robin, because you feel obviously you and Al have a very strong relationship. So you feel safe in saying to Al, hey, you know what? I'm probably going to take a little bit more vacation than maybe my peers are, but you're going to get my focus and you're going to get like 100% of me when I'm on and at work, but I need the time to reflect and just like recharge my battery.
Exactly.
And again, that comes down to the leader and employee relationship, like that feeling that you can have those conversations and that your leader has your back rather than, well, sorry, you only have like 9.5 days of vacation left. So you can't have 10. You can only have 9.5. So I think that's what I'm trying to foster, because as companies get bigger and bigger, it really comes down to like those relationships at the leader employee level to be able to foster that. Like I am one person trying to set policies and practices for the entire organization, but it certainly will fall down if, again, I can't enable my leaders to have those conversations. So that's why I'm so focused on that leadership development, leadership enablement, because it really does drive your culture.
Cheryl, I'm interested in hearing a little bit more about, you know, someone who is just stressed out with whatever, you know, what's going on in the world, family, it could be something going on in their personal lives, but someone comes to you and says, appreciate, you know, the wellness days and everything. I'm burned out. I think I need some help here. What do you do?
Yeah. So there's the practical response. I know every employer has an employee assistance program, but I don't think that's good enough. So that actually, Al, was happening to us. So this year we had a few people that just needed a leave. They got to the point where it didn't just immediately go to like, I'm burnt out, I need to leave. There was multiple conversations. You know, we told them to take time off. The leader worked with them to say, you know, I'm forcing you. Like we actually have had to force people on leaves because they almost are scared to ask because they're afraid that it's going to reflect poorly on their performance or their job will be, you know, at risk. So again, I think that compassion, like having the conversation and being like, okay, where are we at? Like, how long has this been happening? So that's what I would start with. And there's several ways to get there. But one of the things that I instituted this year is that we actually had a parental leave policy. So we had a top up for 12 weeks where, you know, if you had a baby, whether you were a mother or father, whoever, like you were allowed to have 12 weeks off and we would pay the difference between EI and 100% of your salary. And so I sat back and I thought, you know what? The demographic at Blue Cat was getting a little older and there were things happening, like people were getting sick and we had some employees that needed to go on leaves of absence because of like cancer treatment and, you know, a stress leave and things like that. And I thought to myself, if I'm willing to top up people for parental leave, which is very common, why wouldn't we just extend it to all leaves of absence? So obviously there would need to be like, I'm talking like a doctor's note. I'm not saying like I'm going to peace out for 3 months and go on vacation, but like I'm talking about people that need a leave because they need the medical leave. But often people won't do that because 66% of your salary is just not enough. So I thought, well, why are we penalizing people that, you know, yes, you've had a baby and we give you a top up for parental leave, but what about the people that actually like can't work because of their health? So we instituted that this year. That's what I mean about being flexible. Like the policies that you create 3, 4, 10, 20, whatever was in vogue at that time, that does not necessarily stand the test of time. You really need to look at your employees and figure out what's going on. And if you can afford it, do the things like you're not going to have everyone going off on a leave of absence. But if people really need it, taking again that pressure off them for a few months so that they can have that financial burden lifted to help with their recovery, that's what we need to do as employers. Like really look at the way we spend money and make sure that it's still benefiting our employees in the way we want it to.
I think you've got a really smart approach. And, you know, you talked about an EAP not being enough, right? And topping up on parental leave and giving people, almost forcing them to take that leave that we need. And by the way, we have someone at our company named Joe who we have to force to take vacation time as well. So I feel your pain.
It's a real thing. Like, yeah.
It's a real thing. It sounds funny when you say it, but it is a real thing. Like we have to say, Joe, you have not booked any time off this year and we're sitting in June.
Yes.
And Joe will be listening to it and going, oh yeah, they're right.
Joe's getting better.
Okay. He is getting better.
Yeah.
But I was going to say is I love to hear when people are thinking outside of the box, like we said, the EAP and the general benefits plan. Is there anything else? And obviously you don't want to give away all your secrets, but you know, the podcast is Success Leaves Clues, and you're already dropping a lot of clues here, which is great. Yeah. Is there anything that you say, and I'm always looking for this information because of my role in benefits.
Right.
Is there anything you said, hey, this has worked out really well, or hey, if this could happen, this would be kind of the dream scenario? Because I'm always looking for that type of information too.
Yeah. What my recommendation would be is to really look at, you kind of, if we're getting into like employee benefits, like there's ways that you can ensure that your employees feel like you're listening to them. So, I mean, again, I've been at Blue Cat for 10 years, and the things that I would have maybe spent money on 10 years ago are not the same as what I'm spending money on today. So I'm trying to think of an example. Oh, we had a recognition platform, let's say, and it didn't have awards attached to it. And this is outside of your standard health benefit. I'm talking about perks too.
Yeah.
We kind of tried it out. So here's what I would say. You don't have to throw money at everything. You kind of, what I would do is pilot out programs. So we piloted out a recognition program, but with no monetary value attached to it. So if all of your listeners know, like a recognition program, you can do it like with just kudos to each other and it shows up. And I did it cheap and cheerful. Like I put it on our internal intranet and people were able to say, oh, hey, great job. Thanks for your help. That sort of thing. And that really took off because there was nothing like it. But then as we matured as an organization, as we're growing and we're being successful and our revenue is growing, well, then what I decided to do was put some monetary value behind it. So like they have a pool that they can award $10 or $20, $50, whatever, to their peers, and leaders have the same to their employees. And then the employees can go on to Amazon and find things like that. So what my suggestion would be is that you don't have to like go all in and like huge expensive program. Try it out. We tried it out with no money attached to it at all. It really took off. And so I knew that it would be well adopted. So that's where I kind of figure things out. Like I'm not always going to be putting in programs without piloting them. As far as the benefits, this is kind of top of mind for me because I think there's a lot of cool things happening, in particular in women's health. So I've been talking to a few organizations and there's some really cool thinking going around fertility issues and should that be in employees' benefits? And it's the women's health journey, which I could probably talk for another 2 hours. I think it's underserved in medical. The way women's health is treated is probably underserved. So maybe we need to be looking at employers, like how we kind of help our employees with navigate some of, again, those issues that might not be in your standard benefits plan, but it's popping for your organization. So I think, again, there's lots of ways you can look at things and just be open to it. So me, I'm always willing to like learn about new things. And if it works for our organization, I have a tendency to try it out. So yeah, I feel like there's a whole bunch around women's health that I feel like in the next 10 years, it's going to kind of be standard in the employer packages, but we'll see. I mean, that's not standard now. So
women's health is a great example. We've had a few people on the podcast. So a company called Mystoria, Sprout Family, Jessica Chalk, obviously. Yeah. Sprout Family, Suze Mason, fantastic. We've done a couple of cases with her. Yeah. Kind of to your point, piloting them and the feedback, and I mean immediate feedback for the employees within 24 hours was just outstanding.
Yeah.
And then more recently, we spoke to Lori Castleman over at June.
That's exactly. So June Health and Mystoria, I've been in touch with both of them. But again, I'm one of those people that are kind of an early adopter. Like I'm trying to make it work. And I've had conversations with both of them where it might not work for Blue Cat's demographic. So that's the thing. Like you got to look at your employee base.
Absolutely.
And if it's not going to help the majority, it's hard to implement that. But that's not to say we can't have conversations. I can't educate myself about where we could have it work. So yeah.
Absolutely. And I feel like we're aligned on that because I'm an early adopter too, because that's one of the reasons we have three avatars on the podcast, someone like yourself, someone like the CEO, the founder, but then I also do industry stuff. And that's how I met all three of those people on women's health, because
yeah,
if there's something new in my space,
yes.
First of all, I want to know about it. I want to educate myself, even if it doesn't make sense for certain clients. I want to educate myself, but I also want to be the person who gives a platform to something I think is really important through the podcast. And then now we can do that. And I want to be the person, quite frankly, really selfishly, I want to be delivering that to my clients and prospects so that they hear it from me, right?
Yeah.
So, and I'm always happy to make those connections. So I find we're very aligned on that, Cheryl. So that's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
We have arrived at the part of the episode where it's my favorite part, by the way, because every answer 260 episodes in is different. And Al usually stops me and says, well, I have another question before we get there, but we'll see where he is today. But otherwise, I'd love to hear your answer to this because I have a feeling it's going to be a good one.
Yeah, we can definitely jump into it. So I think you've gotten a little bit of a heads up, but here we go. A society grows great when old persons plant trees in whose shade they will never sit. So I would love to hear about any proverbial trees that you might be planting professionally or personally, whatever you feel like sharing.
Yeah. So I think for me, it really goes back to what I was talking about earlier in the podcast, that I had exposure and had a mentor or several mentors that helped me along. And so it's funny, my friend and I, we kind of were talking about this about a year ago. And we want to help university students, new grads, that don't necessarily have parents that are in the, like, we all know that when you have parents that are connected, generally they're going to like sponsor you along, but not everyone that wants to get into business has a parent that's in business. Like, obviously I'm stating the obvious, but what has kind of happened organically is that I've had resumes being passed to me and I love connecting people. I think that that brings me so much joy, is just like connecting people, putting at least a good word in for someone to help them get their first job. I'm still a recruiter. I started my career as a recruiter. So I still have this joy that comes when I'm like, oh my gosh, they got the job. And just even if I connected them. So I think that that is where I can see myself spending time. Like, I have some ideas on what that would look like. But I think, again, just yes, there's co-op programs at universities. My son's going through it right now, but it's that soft skills piece that we were talking about, like having the confidence to maybe apply to something that you're not 100% ready for, but just that innate confidence to go and try it out, because that's really what employers are looking for, that potential and confidence. And so if I can help connect people to opportunities that they wouldn't necessarily be exposed to, that's what I'm thinking about. Like, how do I pay it forward? How do I kind of give back to what I was so fortunate to have in my career? And, you know, full disclosure, I didn't have parents in business. I grew up 3 hours outside of Toronto on a farm. So rural community, went to university and then ended up in Toronto, not knowing anyone. So I was fortunate to have those people in my career to really mentor me, because I just didn't have that exposure to a network of people when I came to Toronto. So I know that's something I want to try and work on and figure out a little bit more.
Well, Cheryl, I've really taken away some key things from our conversation today. You know, I heard about not being afraid to fail. I heard about mentorship and giving a leg up to people like you just discussed. And I heard about communication and over-communication. I think those are three really important things that everyone can take away. And then when we wind this up, I'm really interested to hear about where you actually did grow up, because I also grew up on a farm. So we can dive into that once we finish up.
Okay, sounds good.
Well, for listeners who are interested in learning more about what you're doing, what's the best way to reach out?
Happy to connect through LinkedIn. My profile is up on LinkedIn. We'll happily connect there. So I'm all about the connections and networking.
Perfect. Well, Cheryl, thank you so much for doing this. I have a feeling this isn't our last conversation. It's only the beginning. I really look forward to staying in touch and keeping the conversation going. Well, that does it for today's episode. We really enjoyed the conversation. As always, we hope you did too. If you have any questions for Al or myself, please feel free to give us a call or rejoin the conversation on LinkedIn. Success leaves clues, my friends. We'll see you next time.